All right, everybody, welcome back. This is RCFB Talk 36. My name is Bob Akairi. I'm going to be joined, as always, by Sirius. JD, my other co-host, is going to be out tonight, but Sirius and I are back, and we always enjoy hearing from you and what your thoughts are on college football. So as always, welcoming you to just go ahead and hit request, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm kind of waiting to see when my co-host gets in. He usually pops in as we try to load everything up, as I've always complained, because this is the usual complaint for me. We don't have a green room, so you just basically launch right into it. There he is. All right. Okay, so let's see here. I saw Josh, you popped up really quick. So I'm going to go ahead, and actually several of you popped up really quick. So let's go ahead and start hearing from folks. Josh, what's going on?
Yo, what's up? So I was just wondering, do you have any predictions for Wisconsin next season?
All right, starting with the Badgers. They definitely seem to have, I think, the leading edge heading into the West Division next season. I mean, we talked a little bit about them last week. And the Big Ten West, I think to an extent, with obviously, having Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State in the East, it's always been a little bit less clear on who's going to dominate or even win out in the Big Ten West. But I think Wisconsin has been the one we're leaning towards in a lot of ways. It's hard to really find who could be a challenger for them. I mean, I'm not sure. Minnesota's always kind of, I think, the bigger question of that division. But I think Iowa could easily challenge them as well. I don't know if, well, and I mean, it's become, I would be surprised if Nebraska did. I think at this point, Nebraska's just trying to get into a bowl game again. And Illinois is also a wild card. As we said, the whole West is kind of wild there. Where are you finding this, Sirius? And by the way, how are you, Sirius?
Hey, Bobby. Doing well. Back with more Big Ten talk. Yeah, I think that you've pretty much nailed on the head that it's usual suspects until somebody shows otherwise, right? That's kind of how this typically goes. Looking at Wisconsin, the amount of consistency that they've had under Paul Chryst has just been really phenomenal. It's a good solid base. So Minnesota, sometimes it seems like they're close to getting it all put together, but they just haven't quite nailed it yet. And then I think Iowa is always going to be, under Kirk Ferentz's never-ending tenure, is always going to be in the running to some degree. It just depends on whether or not they're having one of those years or not. So I think that it's hard to go wrong with looking at those three,
Well,
for the
I
Big
think
Ten
to an
West.
extent with Wisconsin, I mean, we need to see if Graham Mears can improve, behind the QB. I think they've got a good running back, and that's always been. I mean, I still remember the '90s runs that where Wisconsin started to establish themselves as that kind of dominant running team. But Josh, how about you? How were you feeling about the Badgers this season? Are you a Badger fan?
Fan. So yeah, I'm pretty confident coming into the year. I think we can go 11-1.
Who do you think that one is?
They on the road, so that'll be a tough game.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us, man. Thanks for kicking us off with that. We appreciate it. All right, Will Hall, we'd love to hear from you. What's going on?
Nothing much, man. Appreciate you taking the time. Actually, an Ole Miss homer down here. Just want to actually talk to you about something that we've been seeing kind of out here in the off season. Transfer portal talk. Got a big get with Bryson Sanders, the 4-star out of Chattanooga. Want to know what you think about the winners and losers in the transfer portal and how it's going to impact the upcoming season.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, the transfer talk, I mean, we've got to give the portal credit for giving off-season talk a little bit more interest rather than, some of the more dull topics in previous years. But I think we've got a lot of thoughts on this. I mean, it's been fun to watch and see. For example, I mean, the whole saga with USC and grabbing that the Pittsburgh. Oh my gosh! Oh gosh! Help me, Sirius. My names are just flying out of my head right now.
I'm kind of wanting to see how long it lasts before you Ricky recognize his name.
I'm the Jordan, worst name it, person in the it, universe.
It's Jordan Addison.
Yes, Addison. I don't know. I knew it was Addison, but I was almost like, oh my gosh, I'm going to totally bomb this. It couldn't be as bad
I mean,
as one time I called somebody the wrong name on the air, which I've done before.
As long as you don't get it mixed up with like Addison Rae or like, you know, one of the influencers or something, it could be worse. I think USC, right? Like I find that it's hard to find somebody that hasn't immediately upgraded their talent the way that USC did. I mean, you got Caleb Williams coming across from Oklahoma following Lincoln Riley, our dear personal friend, Lincoln Riley, making the trip west to USC. And so he pulls Caleb Williams over, and then you add Jordan Addison onto it. I mean, that's immediately, you know, a top tier QB wide receiver duo in the country immediately without anything else going on. And it's not like USC's been awful. They just haven't been USC.
Well, and that's the thing. And we've kind of said this before. The thing with USC historically, I mean, before they got Carroll, they were in a similar rut. It was they could just recruit as well as anybody else. They just never could get anyone to perform to their talents, which I think is why, especially in college football, coaching is so much more important, I think, than some of the other sports, because you have so many cogs in getting the program to run correctly. So you can have some star guys, and a team like USC would get some people in the draft, even though they would have a miserable season. But, you know, on the field, it wouldn't be that good. So Lincoln Riley coming in with, you know, we'll see how it works out after a couple of seasons. But, I mean, you know, coming in with that hype and then getting the boosters excited enough in this kind of combination of NIL / transfer portal world, and suddenly they're able to plug in some people that they might not otherwise have got. But I don't want to just talk strictly about USC here. I mean, let's talk about the other USC. Because, I mean, we've been talking a bit about there. I mean, I think, you
know, it's been a couple of weeks since we've talked about South Carolina, so we're due.
Yeah, so instead of talking about USC, let's talk about USC, who also got Spencer Rattler over there, because that's been one of, the bigger catches as well. I mean, they have others, too. They've got a couple of good receivers out of Arkansas State and James Madison. But that, you know, they're another, I think, winner in all of this. But, I mean, who else do you think we're missing here? There's been so many. Obviously, we'll see how slow this does. I mean, gosh, USC again. But, you know, going over to Pitt, whether that can get the – because, I mean, Panthers, I know some of the preseason stuff is starting to come out, and some of the predictors are saying they have a kind of an outside chance that they're a dark horse candidate to potentially win the ACC. But – I think a lot of that would depend on how well they do in terms of reloading now with a new quarterback and obviously looking for a new number one receiver. But I'm trying to think who else really
there have been. I think there's been a lot of movement with quarterbacks. So that's always an opportunity to immediately change your offense over the last year. So we had Jackson Dart going from USC to Ole Miss. We had Kenon Slovis going from USC to Pitt. We already talked about Caleb Williams going to USC and precipitating the transfer out of those other two guys. You got Bo Nix leaving Auburn to go to Oregon. Really not sure. I mean, I feel like Auburn fans themselves have very mixed feelings about Bo Nix and his capabilities. And then you got Ewers going from technically Ohio State, never saw the field, to Texas. So there's so many different moving pieces there. Just on QBs, and then Gibbs going from Georgia Tech to Bama. And then Oklahoma's actually got some guys too. So there's just so many moving parts to this transfer portal, and especially with NIL factoring into it too, more so than I think what we saw last season.
I think if I were to say there's a team that seems to do poorly with the portal, only because I know it's an area that's got their fans pretty sore, it's Arizona State. I know they tend to lose a ton of players each year, although they bring in new ones. I mean, I know they got a QB out of Florida. I don't know necessarily how strong it's going to be with Emory Jones, but I know that's one of the reasons why Herm Edwards, in addition to, you know, obviously the other ongoing sagas they're dealing with NCAA investigations and things like that. But for a P5 team that should otherwise be able to pull in folks, they seem to lose as many. I mean, because it's easier to look at other teams like Hawaii. Classically, they were one of the teams that did not want the portal because they were always hemorrhaging players. If you don't like being on Hawaii, I mean, it's a tough situation. I mean, you're flying huge flights every time. I've talked to some of the coaches there. It's a trick. It's difficult. I mean, they already have a hard time finding players who will enjoy being on the islands, which sounds weird, but I mean, you're not retiring there. You're going to play college football and you're in your college years. It's not quite the same experience as, you know, now.
Well, I think too, if you're one of those better players and you can develop there, there is kind of a side benefit of often playing in that late night Hawaii test slot where you are going to get on TV just because there's nothing else to air at that point.
So some of us sleepy hardcore fans can watch you.
So there's actually going to be decent tape on you. So if you do make a name for yourself and you start to get some eyes, then, you know, the offers I think would come, you know, just because maybe more so than if you were at a different G5 team that really doesn't get looked at as much.
For sure. Hey, Will, where do you think, where are you on some of this stuff? You know, how are you, who are some of your big transfer winners in all of this?
Yeah, no, I think what you guys said is correct. And I think it's funny what you guys were going over with the real USC, all this, you know, stuff of that nature, man. I think USC's got a great thing going over there with Lincoln Riley. Right, I think Shane Beamer's doing a great job. I think they went into the season being predicted to be, you know, 3-something, right? It wasn't looking too hot for them. And the fact that they made it to that bowl game with North Carolina, it's going good. You know, it's really interesting to look at. It's really interesting to look at. I think Ole Miss has done a great job. I think Kiffin's done a good job. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. But you look at, you know, what this kind of means for the game moving forward, and I think we got some really interesting stuff going on here.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Will. We appreciate you joining us.
I appreciate it, man. Take care, y'all.
Yep, thank you. And let's see here. We got Matthew Aaron Flowers. I'm just going to your username. Thanks for joining us. Might be having a little trouble. Well, it looks like you're unmuted. Sometimes the audio gets to be a little quirky with this. So no stress if you're having a technical difficulty there. We can work that out. I'm just going to move on to the next person. We'll get back to you, I promise. All right, let's see here. Preeti. We'd love to hear from you.
Is it me? Oh, it is me. Sorry, I had a little bit of a lag.
No worries.
My question actually is, what do you think is going to happen with the first game of the season between Oregon and Georgia? That, obviously, I know it's not the overall first game of the season, but for both teams, with the fact that Oregon's head coach is Georgia's old DC, I feel like a lot of people are going to be looking at this game, and it could, I don't know, what do you think? How is it going to go?
That's a great question. I think that's, you're right. That's certainly one of the most intriguing games because of that. I mean, I know, Sirius, we talked about this a little bit in prior weeks, but it's hard to bet against Georgia. I mean, you know, not that we're gambling too, but I mean, it's hard to bet against Georgia because it's, you know, they're the returning national champs. And you know, as talented as, you know, the new head coaches at Oregon, he's going to be setting up a whole new system. Obviously, Mario Cristobal didn't leave him. You know, Mario Cristobal was a surprise for a lot of reasons. I mean, not entirely surprised because obviously, you know, he was connected there. But Dan Lanning, you know, has inherited a pretty decent team. But still, I mean, it's playing Georgia. It's at a quasi-neutral site. It's in Atlanta. So, you know.
Putting it gently.
Gently, yeah. I mean, and you know the Georgia fans in that region are all hype about seeing the next Georgia game after they win their national championship. So that audience is going to be probably, I mean, I can't imagine the energy in that building. It's going to be incredible. I mean, at least if you're a Georgia fan. So
I mean, the most you can hope for, I think, in terms of it being a semi-even crowd would be that that Georgia fans are just tired of playing in in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, so they're just going to skip this one. Which, you know, it's the argument we've heard about, like, Bama fans playing in the Sugar Bowl. Like, it's whatever. It's the Sugar Bowl. We've been there, like, 15,000 times. But I don't think that's going to happen this year, because I think everybody's going to be riding that high based off of that national championship win. But, yeah, I think if we go back to when we kind of discussed this in past weeks, that if you're an Oregon fan, obviously you want them to pull off the upset, you want them to pull off the win, but having kind of like some realistic expectations of what counts as a good result for new coach, you know, new kind of philosophy, going from Cristobal to Lang, offensive to defensive mindset, that you want to see them stay competitive. You don't want to be USC against Bama from, you know, like 8 years ago. You want to look like, you know, look like they belong in the same field and hopefully keep it relatively close, and don't get run out of the building and show, you know, signs of improvement maybe over last year's team even, or at least just stay consistent like you haven't dropped off of a cliff. And I think that that's the expectation that I would have as an Oregon fan. And if you're a Georgia fan, then you want to see whether or not you replace the guys you lost in the draft, because they lost a ton of talent. But it's a stacked roster. They recruit well. And Kirby Smart develops players well. So that'll be interesting to see. And kind of, you know, how their defense has changed now that Lanning has left.
I think it – I don't know. I'm an Oregon fan. I will admit that. I'm a diehard Ducks fan. But I think the – and I am trying. I understand what you're saying about having a realistic expectation. And I do think even if – for me, as long as they don't get blown out, if Oregon was to lose, which obviously I'm going to hope against hope that they don't. But if Oregon was to lose – I'm going to hope that they don't get blown out and that you can see that, you know, there are improvements and changes from last season. But I think the fact that last year when we were having these off-season conversations and Oregon, it was Oregon playing OSU as one of the first games of the season, the fact that Oregon did manage to win and beat OSU has given at least the fans that I've talked to, because I live in the area, I live in the Eugene area, has given people kind of like a little drop of hope that, hey, we managed to do it last year. We could potentially, it could happen this year. So it's interesting. I feel like this is going to be probably one of the most highly watched game of the season, just because everybody's so excited to see how it all plays out, because there's so many different factors at play.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a kickoff. It's a triple A kickoff game. I think, you know, and realistically, again, you know, Oregon could lose the game and still end up in the position to be in the playoffs. I mean, if they win out, no one would, I mean, even if this is, now we're talking complete hypothetical that would never happen, but let's say Georgia wins and then Georgia somehow tanks the rest of the season. You know, I don't even think that would harm Oregon's chances if Oregon were to then win out, because I think Oregon's going to be favored almost every game they play after that. I mean, the toughest games are going to be in the regular season are going to be probably they do have a cross-divisional game against Utah, and then, you know, maybe some hiccups within the division, but I'm not sure. But I mean, for example, they're going to, you know, the rest of the non-conference slate is more reasonable. They got Eastern Washington coming in, and then they're hosting BYU, which isn't going to be a pushover, but I mean, that's more realistic. But again, certainly, I mean, it's Oregon. If they were to, they're not impossible. It's not like saying, can Akron upset Georgia, you know, in an early season game with the type of Georgia team that's coming off of a national championship, granted, with I think only 10 returning starters, but still, I mean, so yeah, I think certainly Oregon can, I mean, as long as, yeah, I agree. If Oregon can somehow manage to stay competitive, not get blown out like USC did against Alabama. That was a great example, because that was just a shocker in how badly USC got eliminated in that preseason game. I think it was in the Cotton Bowl, but in AT&T Stadium. But I think Oregon.
Yeah, I think if you're an Oregon fan, you know, you are spot on. Like the win over Ohio State last year, if you're going to play a team like this, trying to play them at the very start of the season, when they maybe still have some kinks to figure out, they've got some guys that are starting for the first time. Usually it seems like your best chances are either right at the very beginning or right at the tail end, where maybe they had some attrition. And that's your chance. And you've got a guy with Dan Lanning who, I mean, he knows the Georgia offense as well as anybody probably could from the defensive perspective, just because, I mean, his guys had to scrimmage against them. So he's had to do some game planning just from that perspective, and he's been in the building. He knows how those guys think. So I'll be interested to see if he's got maybe some tricks up his sleeve to try to throw at Stetson Bennett and the Dogs and try to throw them off their game a little bit. But definitely, if we think back to some past coaching changes at Oregon, he's taking over a better team than what you saw happen in the past changes, because there were some rough transitions there. So it's not like he's having to start from ground zero and build right back up. He's starting with a top 20, top 15 team.
Well, thanks for joining. Really appreciated it. Hey, Matthew, looks like we got you back. Did it work this time?
Hey guys, I think so. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Thanks.
Okay, cool. Actually, Ohio State fan, so weird coming off that call because we're talking about Oregon beating Ohio State last year. So I guess a couple questions. One being, so with Ohio State, especially the comments even today and past weeks with Marcus Freeman from Notre Dame, curious your thoughts on his comments about Ohio State, especially as a former Ohio State player, and also how you see Ohio State kind of faring out this year.
I think the Freeman comments are basically recruiting talk. You can say that it's bulletin board material for the Ohio State game, but realistically, I'm sure both teams have that game circled because, you know, it's going to be a big time test for both programs early in the season. So I think that the recruiting angle makes the most sense, that they're both competing for the same recruit. And if he cares about academics, or he said he cares about academics, then, you know, Marcus Freeman is just kind of try to get a knife in a little bit. Obviously, you know, he's an OSU alum, so it's a little self-deprecating in that regard. But
yeah,
one of those things. It's going to get a lot of clicks, and it's going to make a lot of the news cycle. But on the other hand, how many people were talking about Notre Dame right now? For football, a lot of people have been talking about Notre Dame baseball lately. But how many people are talking about Notre Dame football right now? If he's in the battle for a recruit and trying to get a little bit of publicity. We saw the same approach with Lane Kiffin in the past of, you say something that's, it's a little outlandish, but ESPN picks it up and all of a sudden you're on, the 24-hour news cycle for sports when otherwise there wasn't really a need for you to be talked about.
I just, in case some of the folks out there don't know what we're talking about, there was, I guess he was doing an interview with CBS Sports and he asked a rhetorical question. We're talking about Coach Freeman. You don't go to class, at a place like that. Okay, you take some online classes, show up for your appointments. At Notre Dame, you're forced to go to class every day. So that's kind of where it's coming from. Because, I mean, he did, as we've said, he went to Ohio State. He played linebacker under Tressel.
Yeah.
And that's been what's bringing up some of it really is bulletin board talk. I mean, it does feel like recruiting talk, and Notre Dame is famous, I think. I mean, historically for being, they like to say, oh, but we're really a good academic school too. And they are. I mean, I'm not saying they're not a good academic school, but yeah. I mean, for their players and all that stuff, but it would be insulting to say the same, I think, about that. Pardon me, that imply that a school like Ohio State or frankly, any of the Big Ten are, because I mean, they're all solid universities. I think to an extent, you just have to say how much does the player want to get out of the academic, coursework. That's always, but I think that's a question as old as time. Where are you on this, Matthew?
Well, I think, and it's kind of a philosophical thing at this point. I think as a young man, so I'm not even 30 years old yet. I've been a massive college football fan my whole life. I think I have some sort of guilt, I suppose, with this newfound, obviously, NIL deals and transfer portals. Like, I almost feel guilty that the program I root for is almost going to be consistently relevant. And I really don't even know how to reckon with that as an old school college football fan where it was just built on the program, its tradition, and kind of things like that.
One of the funnier things that was – included in the commentary on the Reddit thread for it was actually one of our cohorts, Bacon and Draco, created a chart where, it's a very simple chart, a 2x2 chart where real and serious, you know, Ohio State girlfriends, Notre Dame classes, online and fake Ohio State classes, Notre Dame girlfriends. And I don't know, I thought that one made me laugh. So
it was one of those rare zingers that manages to hit both parties involved at the same time from a completely unrelated third party. Well, no, I say unrelated. He is a Stanford fan, and of course, you know, Lin Akiko was a Stanford graduate, so allegedly.
He's just too smart for his own good sometimes. Well, thanks, Matthew. We really appreciate hearing from you. Let's see here. I almost sent a direct message rather than let somebody talk. All right, Reed, it's good to hear from you again, man.
I was on mute, sorry. Quick question for you. Let's talk Florida a little bit. Norvell, Napier, Cristobal. Do you see Norvell turning around Florida State anytime soon? Did I get that right, Norvell? But just wanted to get your thoughts on the state of Florida football and ACC.
Well, I think this really needs to be the season where Norvell kind of shows that to some improvement. I mean, they weren't bad last year. I mean, they weren't great. Certainly they got a lot of heat for some of those losses. But, I mean, 5-7 mark, they almost made it to a bowl. It would be, I think, important to see the Noles at least make a bowl this season. I think a lot of their fans would like a lot more because, obviously, it's hard to think of Florida State as anything other than a more dominant program than they have been in recent years. But I think that's a big part of it. I don't know if realistically they could challenge for the ACC this season. I mean, yeah, they're in the Atlantic Division, so that's going to be a lot heavier. I mean, a lot of people are more trying to see if Clemson is going to return to sort of at least a more prominent position and recover from that blip last season. And I know, you know, NC State fans are we actually had an NC State fan, I think, last week who even came on. Because they're hyped. They think this might be their year to finally break through and get to the conference title game. And then Wake Forest is still strong. So, you know, I'm not sure if this is going to be the season where Florida State challenges to be at least in the conference title game. But certainly, I think expectations for Norvell are should at least get to bowl contention. What do you think, Sirius?
For his sake, they better make it back to a bowl. I mean, this has been a drought that Florida State fans definitely are not used to, and I can't imagine that they're going to get any more patient if it goes longer than this. So I think that he's kind of make or break year almost, right? That he's doing to show there's been a serious improvement that they can actually get the wins, because otherwise, what are you doing there? I mean, it's not like he was taking over a program that didn't have the ability to compete. So really it kind of just comes down to coaching. And I know that he inherited a lot of roster problems. You know, their O-line was atrocious for years. So that kind of thing takes development, but we're talking about year four now. So you've got all your guys in there and they're now upperclassmen. They need to be coming through and actually fulfilling on their potential if you've coached them up properly. So I think in my mind, it's a make or break year. I think that Florida is probably in a better position if we're talking about the other three P5 coaches with Billy Napier did a heck of a job at his previous stop. So really interested to see what he's going to do this season. Cristobal, I think maybe has a little bit more of rebuilding to do at Miami. Just trying to get them turned around the way that he probably wants to see them. We've seen what he can do at a P5 program. I mean, we can say the same thing about Willie Smart, but Cristobal is coming off of getting Oregon to a really good spot. So I think that he can do it at Miami, but I think he's going to need probably a year to get the kinks out before we can really look to improvement, see improvement there.
I agree with you on Miami. Now, Florida, I think they're a bigger question. I'm not sure where to put it. I mean, but by the way, for Miami, I think they're also excited because, hey, they've got boosters under investigation again. The NCAA, for some reason, is now looking at their NIL deals because I guess when in doubt, just pick Miami because they're probably the more corrupt of the programs. I'm not
– Miami's back, baby.
I say that with love because that's the U is back, you know. So
but the U is not back if someone is not under investigation.
Yeah, I mean, investigations, that's like they draw strength off of that. That's actually something that gives them power.
That means it's working.
Yeah. Now, with Florida State, though, I mean, just kind of, you know, again, last year that Jackson, you know, losing to Jacksonville State, that was a huge, you know, that was a huge fiasco. Now, this season, I'm pretty sure they're going to, you know, they've got an FCS program to start out, but it's Duquesne, so I don't think they're going to lose to them. But that next game, they've got the neutral site. Again, we've got another fake neutral site game because it's against LSU in the Superdome. I mean, you know, neutral. But that game is going to be really interesting. I mean, everyone's going to want to see Brian Kelly's family or however he says it. You know, that's opener. I forgot about that because yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how LSU does, and then Florida State is going to be trying to show some improvement. So that game is going to have my biggest kind of circle for what angle the season for the Noles is going to be heading into 2022 for sure. So.
I do want to apologize real quick because I did misspeak. I said that Norvell's going into year four. He's going into year three. But the point still stands, though, in terms of, like, your guys are in there. You know, they should be juniors and everything. But it is year three, not year four. So a little bit more leniency, but he needs to at least get them to a bowl game this year, I think.
So, Reed, what are your thoughts?
Not a high standard. Hopefully they can get to a bowl. Hopefully Norvell can turn him around. I think, as y'all mentioned, he's the seasoned of the three coaches here. I don't know what's going to shake out. Napier at Florida and Cristobal down in Miami. It's going to take a little time. I don't know. I'm just curious what everybody thinks. Don't know.
This is probably one of the years where Florida is just completely wide open in terms of storylines. Yeah, you're right. None of them have a real story. There isn't one of the three teams doesn't seem to be, this is their year. We're going in with expectations or, I mean, the closest thing we have is a potential for a hot seat at Florida State, but that's about it. Well, thanks, Reed. It's great hearing from you, man. We have a lot of people up who want to talk. So we want to try to get as many of you as we can. Thank you all for your patience as we're here on RCFB Talk 36. All right. So let's see here. We're going to move through Matthew Armstrong. Matthew Armstrong, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Great.
So I know there's a little bit of, maybe I guess, hostility towards Tennessee right now, but I want to talk about Tennessee football and see what do you guys think about the chances of Hooker being a Heisman front runner?
That's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of hype behind Hooker right now. I think the Vols seem to be heading into this season with a lot of potential. And now, Sirius, I know you have some thoughts on this because I think they've always had pressure there. It's always been because Tennessee should be always a contender, at least with its history and its tradition. I mean, it should be able to constantly challenge, at least for the division, if not the conference. Of course, you say that and you've got a lot of competition there. But I think they have the – I mean, Sirius, where are you on this?
Saw Hooker play for Virginia Tech before he transferred, and he was pretty solid there. Definitely didn't have anywhere near the kind of season he's had at Tennessee. I think that a lot of the hype for him tends to be because statistically, if you look at the metrics, he ranks really, really high in terms of the QB efficiency metrics. Watching the game, sometimes you kind of see it for an observer, you know, third party, not invested in, like, you know, the teams on the field. It seems maybe that sometimes a lot of that is because he tends to, he's not asked to do a whole lot when it comes to passing. You know, a lot of his stuff is, you know, play action passes, check downs, that kind of thing. The short passes that you take what the defense gives you, which there's a lot of skill, don't get me wrong. So I think that if he wants to try to make a claim for making a Heisman run, then he kind of needs to elevate it up to the next level and take the reins more on offense and be that playmaker, big impact player that you see with the other guys. Because if you look at the QBs who were in contention last year, I mean, way more attempts, more yardage, those kinds of things that he didn't really have in that offensive system. So maybe that's going to be an aspect of Josh Heupel having a little bit more confidence in his quarterback, being willing to, you know, open up the offense more, let him take more shots downfield, being a little bit more aggressive in terms of his play options, what he can do with his arm. That's kind of my mindset on it, that right now he's playing a little safe. You know, he's scoring them. They're scoring a lot of points with him. He's not turning the ball over a ton. He's taking care of things, almost kind of like a Stetson Bennett type approach. And we saw Stetson Bennett. They took the training wheels off of him. They let him be a little bit of a gunslinger when it mattered in the playoffs, and it worked. So I think that that's kind of the evolution I'd be looking for with Hooker if he wants to actually make a run at, you know, trying to have a Heisman-type season.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how he does against Pitt in week two, because that's going to be a national game. I think it's on ABC already. They've already announced that. So that's going to be a good game to sort of get that hype train moving. They have a strong game there. So that'll be an opportunity to see not only where Tennessee is, and I mean, they've been on, you know, a rise, certainly. I think this would be a great opportunity to see improvements, you know, under the coaching regime, and also just see if this is going to be an opportunity for him to make a splash and get that train running. Because again, a strong QB for an SEC team would, I mean, having an outstanding season would be a very likely front runner for the Heisman. But I mean, again, yeah, I agree with everything my co-host said. How about you? What are you thinking heading into this season, Matt?
Yeah. So I'm a big Tennessee fan. So I watched all the games last year, and to a little bit of a point about, to give him some credit, he didn't start the first, I think it was first three games, because he didn't end up playing to the Pitt game. I think that was week three. And throughout the season, it seemed like he had some good decisions, but he always felt like he was way aggressive in his running motions. And it just seemed like that kind of bit him in the foot sometimes, because he would always try and run when he didn't necessarily have to, or he'd take a sack where he didn't have to. And I kind of really want to see him, like, I guess, make better decisions and be more crisp in making those decisions. And I think that if he does that, his play is going to get elevated quite a bit.
Yeah.
Part of that sounds like it's that confidence thing of being comfortable and taking, you know, pass first, and don't just, you know, kind of check down out of that, you know, assume the worst. Kind of sounds a little bit like some of the complaints we heard from Nebraska fans with Adrian Martinez last year, of just making, you know, some crucial errors when he really didn't need to, in terms of, you know, throwing interceptions at the wrong time, or, you know, even not necessarily making bad decisions sometimes, just not making the best decision.
And you know, staff certainly will help too. Usually that's when you start to see, hopefully, if a QB is going to hit that next level, you'll start to see that as well. Well, thanks so much, Matthew. We really appreciate you. We really appreciate it. We're going to keep moving. It's incredible how many people are requesting, so we want to keep it moving. Derek, we'd love to hear from you.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I can't complain. Can't complain. Just waiting for August to roll around and college football to kick off here. I'm going to swing it back to the Big Ten East here. And just curious, it seems like everybody's down a little bit on Penn State this year. Just curious what you guys' thoughts are, what your thoughts on James Franklin are, and if we see this Sean Clifford from the first 4.5 games, or if we see post-injury Sean Clifford this year.
Well, that's now. There's a couple of good questions there. I think going into this season, you know, obviously Penn State, as you said, it's a little unclear how they're going to be. It hurts that they're in the East with Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State. It's going to be, you know, a question of how they're going to perform there with James Franklin. As we like to say, he has one of the best agents in the game. So does Mel Tucker. After they got those huge, you know, those huge contract renewals in the middle of the season, right before their seasons kind of took a left turn in both of their cases. But that said, you know, and I'm gonna actually defer to Sirius on this because he's a bigger James Franklin follower, only because he followed him closely also at Vandy. What do you think? How do you think things are heading over there?
Gosh, players coming back from injuries, that's always a toss up. Because it's not just how they rehabbed from that. You know, it's also the mindset that they have. So it's just really, really tough to try to predict what's going to – how they're going to bounce back. And we've seen it, I mean, in other sports too. I think Derrick Rose is a classic example that, you know, after his knee surgeries, physically he might have been – good enough to play at the same level, but mentally you could tell that he didn't trust his knees. He was so afraid of them, of something going wrong with them again. So sometimes it takes a while to build back confidence in your own body. So I think that's always going to be hard to predict. Hopefully Clifford is back 100% and we get to see the same guy that we saw last year, because when he was healthy and on, that was an exciting team to watch. So I'll be curious to see how that goes. We've talked about in the past, you know, Penn State, Franklin needs to get things back on track. You know, he's got big, long extension, good contract right now, and it's murderer's row in the Big Ten East. So if you're going to make a splash, you kind of need to show that you belong and you can run with the big boys. And there's always a chance you can catch one of them off guard if you're good enough. So I'm going to be curious to see how it works out for Penn State this year, just because competition is going to be rough. So we'll see if Franklin can get things going again, and we'll see how Clifford comes back.
And you know, unsurprisingly, after the spring game, Franklin and Clifford sounded optimistic, but we won't really know until we see them in competition. So that's the unfortunate thing. And I, you know, it's a classic lawyer answer. It depends. So, but I mean, ideally, you know, again, we're talking about, as we say with the other QBs, we've talked about that second year in the system, that confidence that comes with that. So I guess physically, if he is stepping back up, he should be fine. And certainly there have been plenty of talented players at multiple positions who've come back from injury to be better than ever. So as a Penn State fan, we're hoping for you that that happens. But thanks so much. We really appreciate you. Well, actually, how about you? Where do you? We always like to hear from folks. I mean, because we want this to be a discussion, we'd like to hear from you guys. How are you feeling about Penn State heading into this season?
I'm feeling pretty confident. I've kind of always been labeled as the really optimistic. But I like the fact that, you know, like you had mentioned, year two in the offensive system, big fan of James Franklin. So I'm happy with what he's done. I do think they need to kind of get back on track here. I think last year was kind of unlucky, and coming off of a COVID year is not the greatest look. But replacing Brent Pry, who I think was a great hire for Virginia Tech, with Manny Diaz is always a good thing too. I don't think there's going to be much fall off defensively. And then, you know, losing Dotson in the draft was tough, but getting Tinsley in the transfer portal was definitely helpful. So I think the offense will have a good chance to be really good this year, and they'll be in a lot of games. Not a fan of opening on Thursday night at Purdue, But I think if they can survive that one and come home with a win and injury free, I think that the sky is really the limit, because I think they could, they can compete with everybody in the Big Ten East. So
don't be scared of Purdue. You're not Ohio State.
Or Iowa, but either way.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Derek. It was great hearing from you. All right, Bucky Kest, what's up? We'd love to hear from you.
Hey there. Just had a quick question. With Wisconsin, is Braylon Allen kind of a sleeper candidate for the Heisman Trophy at this point, do you think? I know he only had like 1,200 yards rushing last year, but that was in, you know, basically 8 or 9 games. With a full season in, could he possibly be a player that you could see being in the Heisman conversation?
Well, we've had this – it's funny you mentioned it. We've had this conversation in previous weeks about how hard it's become for a running back to really get to a point where they might be the Heisman winner, finalist potentially. But becoming a winner seems to have become almost prohibitive at this point. But he's certainly a rising star there. And I think really a lot of that offense is going to be on his shoulders heading into the season. So perhaps, you know, as it tends to be, I mean, and again, another complaint even longer standing with the Heisman is it tends to reward the best player on the best team is not necessarily the best player. So him, if Wisconsin starts to really, you know, not only match expectations of being the best team in the West, but perhaps even becoming a legitimate contender for winning the entire Big Ten and that chance at the CFP, or, you know, perhaps a strong enough season where they become the New Year's Six candidate, I think that would certainly bring him up. That would certainly bring up his stock to the point where he would be a finalist, if not a potential, you know, Heisman winner. But again, I'm hesitant to think that we're in an age, I mean, maybe we'll be surprised, but it would take an incredible performance, I think, at this point for a running back. What do you think, Sirius?
It's almost unfair how hard it is for a running back to, like, you have to have you have to have a Barry-like season, but actually that's not even good enough. You know, we saw that a few years ago. That you have to surpass that at this point. But in terms of what he did as a freshman, I mean, he's not even 19 yet. Like, he literally just turned 18. So, which I'm sure, you know, is something that's going to get talked about on every single broadcast.
We never hear about it. Never.
Right? That's one of those talking points that always shows up is the age one, when they're either super young or super old. So if I'm a Wisconsin fan, you know, I'd be pretty excited about the fact that you get to see him for 2 more years, because I would imagine that if you're a running back and you're trying to prove that you can be an every down back in the NFL, historically, there's not many better places to do that than Wisconsin. So even in the age of the transfer portal and NIL, if I'm a running back and I want to be able to show off what I can do, then Wisconsin's got to be pretty high on the list, because you know you're going to get plenty of opportunities to run the ball. And it's been that way for decades now. So if I'm a Wisconsin fan, I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do. And we'll see if it's enough to get him. At this point, I think if you're a running back, if you get an invite as a finalist, if you get invited to New York for the Heisman, that's almost as good as winning it in terms of just realistically what you can actually accomplish.
I was just going to say, you're probably right. It's just that's probably the best you can do at this point, is be like invited to the ceremony and, hey, I was there. I saw it. It was right there.
Yeah. It's disappointing. Trust me. We wish it were different. I mean, and even then, most of us remember how weird it was to think that it was only going to a running back or a quarterback. I mean, it's just each year, it just sort of seemed to become more of a narrower field.
Well,
who could potentially win?
Wisconsin fans were used to this now, because after the season Melvin Gordon had a few years ago, and having Jonathan Taylor for 3 years, and that wasn't even good enough. it just feels like, you know, we had Ron Dayne, and there have been three running backs since him that have been of his caliber who haven't gotten really, other than Gordon, got a sniff of the Heisman. And it's disappointing, I think, because it's now a quarterback-driven game, and, you know, whoever puts up the gaudiest stats for the best team usually in the SEC or ACC is the guy who winds up winning the Heisman, or the Big 12, I guess.
You know, I do got to say, Wisconsin has a really nice run-up to their non-conference schedule. You're hosting everybody, including Wazoo. I wonder what he gets. I mean, obviously, it's New Mexico State, but Jerry Kill heading back to Camp Randall with a slightly weaker program than what he lost with prior. Because I don't think he ever.
We would say it's an upgrade. We would say it's an upgrade for him. But
that's a very Bucky thing to say. But well, thanks so much for joining us. It was great hearing from you.
Not a problem. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, Ian. Ian, we'd love to hear from you. Oh, it looks like it did a hiccup there. Looks like there was an error, so we're going to go ahead and try that again. Hey, Ian, I seem to keep getting errors. I know we tried to let you up, and it's kind of bouncing me back. So we will work on getting you in. Don't worry about that. While that's going, hey, Juwan. Oh, wait, no, Ian, you can speak now. Wait, no, you can't. Oh, this is just going crazy. And then Greg got at it. All right. Let's talk to you, Greg.
I'm a Rutgers alumni, unfortunately, with the football program being down as much as we are. What's your perception on Shiano and the program, and who should they start at quarterback? Because I think it should be Gavin Wimsatt.
Well, Shiano, you know, it's hard. You know, I remember what Shiano did the first time, taking a team that was a complete basket case and getting an annual point where they could get into a bowl, which was a huge deal for Rutgers. So it's hard to say, like, you know, it's hard for me to ever not like Shiano at Rutgers. It just seems like an ideal fit for him, and he really seems to genuinely care about the program. Now, it would be nice to see some progress there. Can they make a bowl this season? I'm not sure, but I would like to see them get to that point. So let's see. You thought so you're going with Wimsatt for the QB, correct?
Yes.
What do you like about him more than Noah?
He's youthful. He has a little bit of a zip on the ball. Vidral can't even complete a bubble screen without getting it intercepted half the time. So I like Gavin Wimsatt's. Also, his decision making is pretty good too.
Well, you know, I think heading into this season, that's going to be helpful. I mean, and he's got the youth behind him. I know I didn't pay attention to how they did in the spring. I'll openly admit that to see who was looking better. I know that, though. You know, certainly. What's their non-conference like? I'm going to be honest with you, Greg. How do you see them doing this season?
Let's see. It's not very good. Maybe like 4 wins.
And they haven't really gotten a fair shot at being in the Big Ten, I don't think, because they had that success under Shiano. The first time around, but that was on the Big East, and, you know, they made the transition. And up until now, they've just kind of been a bit of a doormat for those East teams, you know, Michigan, Ohio State waging a proxy war on them, trying to see who can score more points. So it's unfortunate. You hate to see it for the fans and for the players, because they haven't really gotten a chance to prove that they belong. So hopefully with Shiano being back, that they can try to, you know, turn the ship a little bit and at least be more competitive in those games, and not just kind of get boat raced. So it's a tough slate. I mean, you're looking at likely 4 losses unless you get really, really lucky, just with those big 4 teams in the East. And then, you know, they're catching Iowa out of the West to throw onto it. So it's going to be a tough season, but, you know, Boston College, I think, is not a terrible draw out of conference.
Yeah,
Temple,
they don't have a terrible non-conference schedule.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, two of them are away games. That's the worst thing I could say about it. I mean, at Boston College is a little bit tougher than hosting them. Wagner should be a pretty easy one to get through, hosting an FCS program that is not particularly strong. And then at Temple, again, you know, Temple has been not, you know, Temple isn't as good as they used to be. So I think that is, again, another winnable game. But then immediately hosting Iowa, that's going to be, and then at Ohio State. I mean, at this point, you know, we'll see how well they could do, you know, hosting, how well they can do hosting Nebraska and then Indiana. So I think it's going to be an interesting, that first half of the season, that's going to be make or break for them. I mean, I don't think anyone realistically expects them to beat Ohio State in Ohio Stadium. That Iowa game at home will still be very unlikely, but if they could somehow win half of those games, I think that would be a plus. And then maybe steal one or two others, perhaps, you know, at Minnesota or at Maryland. But that's brutal. I mean, that's the scheduling isn't particularly helpful for Rutgers this year.
I will say, though, you know, they did manage to get a bowl invite last year. They only won five games, but they were able to get a bowl invite. And actually, of all places, went to the Gator Bowl, which is a pretty good draw. To be totally honest. And a lot of coaches in the past have talked about how much those bowl games mean, not just because of like program morale and things, but because you get added practices in order to prep for those bowl games, because the NCAA does regulate how many times you can practice pretty heavily. And the ability to get more guys some snaps, especially maybe some underclassmen, to get them ready, not just for the bowl game, but also to kind of get a head start on the next season, that can actually have a big impact in addition to the ability to go and play the game and the kids get a fun trip and everything. But there is a chance there for a little bit of extra development too, that otherwise you miss out on.
It would be really funny if that's like the magic, that has been the magic button, and then we're all going to be talking about that's why Rutgers is your unexpected Big Ten East champion. setting aside that at Lark, you know, we'll see. I think definitely though that those first three games are going to be pretty critical, and hopefully building a winning team that can challenge some more of those tough conference games. But thanks, Greg. We're really sorry about how ominous that was. At least not the New Mexico guy we had last week. That one was just, oh my goodness.
Wait, but you know what?
Yeah,
I'm waiting for basketball season. Steve Peichel has men's basketball doing really well, so I'm just waiting for basketball season in November. That's all I'm going to do.
Nice. We love it, Greg. Thanks for calling, man. It was great to hear from you.
You too. You guys do a good job. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Hey, Ian, did we get that to work for you now? Are you able to unmute?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Can y'all hear me? All right, great.
Yeah,
sorry about that. Don't know what happened.
Don't be.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm a big Colorado fan, but I'm also a big Pac-12 fan. I know we don't have too many of those nowadays, but I'm really curious really what y'all think of just how the Pac-12 is going to end up this year. I really think it's just really wide open, which is so much going on and all the coaching changes really outside of Utah. And I kind of wanted to kind of pick y'all's brain on it and what you thought about it. So that's kind of what I want to talk about.
You phrased that, I think, kind of identified why it's so wide open. There is so much coaching change. I mean, and that's to an extent probably why Utah is sort of the favored team heading into this season, because of that stability, because of the fact that, you know, it's constant winner under Whittingham. So I think, you know, obviously USC certainly, I mean, I'm going to be interested to see how it goes. I think there'll be a bit of a splash. There's a lot of predictions that, I mean, there have been some really crazy preseason rankings that have put USC in the top five, which is asinine in my mind. I mean, yeah, Riley is a decent, you know, coach, but I mean, you know, he's getting all his players now. He's going to be sitting in, you know, in the system. I mean, they could certainly challenge.
I don't know if I would have put Riley at Oklahoma in the top five. So preseason. Yeah. So, I mean, putting USC in the top five is crazy talk.
It's crazy talk. I couldn't even believe that one when I saw it. So I think that's just the USC bump that they always would get only to then lose it. So really, you know, Oregon seems to be, we were just talking about them earlier, you know, Oregon seems to have, you know, the more favorable position in the North. Lanning's inheriting a pretty good, you know, program there from Cristobal. The rest of the North is a little bit of a jumble. I don't know if there's really a team where I'd say certainly going to lose it all. So, I mean, they're more of a question mark. The South, obviously, you've got Utah and USC. They seem to be the likely contenders to take it all, but it would be hard not to say UCLA, Arizona, or, you know, Arizona State, Colorado. Colorado seems to be improving. I mean, I was, you know, well, it's Colorado. It's hard to predict. It's so funny. We're just talking about that. And there was a post on RCFB talking about, you know, it's been 12, this like a couple of days ago, or it was this week, it was 12 years ago that, you know, Colorado and Nebraska left the Big 12 and set in the motion all of those big moves that we saw in subsequent years. And Colorado, to some extent, has sort of fallen off the map a bit. But, it's hard for me to predict where they're going to be. I mean, how are you feeling about the Buffs heading into this season?
I'm a big Colorado fan. I'm an alum from that school. I mean, I obviously remember back in the 90s with McCartney, of course, and we had Neuheisel and whatnot. And I mean, we're obviously, I mean, a premier program at the time, and then kind of everything fell off of Hawkins and kind of so be it. We had the one good year with McIntyre, but I mean, I don't know. I just think with today's kind of NIL and stuff, Colorado's not like a major program. And as you saw this year, we lost Gonzalez to Oregon, who was a good cornerback. We lost Brennan Rice, Jerry's son, to USC, another starting cornerback to USC. It's hard being a Colorado fan because it's just so hard to really keep up with it on our market. I feel like we're definitely like a smaller market team, but
is Utah to an extent. They can make it work, so it's not impossible. You know, it's more
difficult. I hate to break it to you, but I don't think Carl Durrell is the next Kyle Whittingham.
I
was surprised when he got hired.
Having seen what he did in 1 year at Vanderbilt, I was absolutely shocked that someone gave him the head coaching job.
Hey, yeah, as someone dyed-in-the-wool USC fan in my heart of hearts, I was thrilled to see him back in the Pac-12. But
that's mean.
Well, I mean, those were some wonderful years at UCLA he had for us. Oh, he had. I mean, to be fair, he had one really good season there. Where other than losing to USC, I think that was the only blemish. But and it's funny too to look at the Colorado schedule. They're going to play Air Force at a year where Air Force is looking pretty good because they've returned a lot of guys. So I think that's going to be an interesting game for Colorado early on. It's so weird to not see them playing Colorado State. That to me is completely it doesn't feel right, you know. Especially seeing them play in Denver or, you know, something like that. That's just an absolute shame. But I'm not sure, you know, they're hosting TCU, they're playing at Air Force, and then they're playing at Minnesota. Huh, I wonder if I should cover that game. But that's not the easiest slate, especially for a team that's trying to establish themselves and try and hopefully go to a bowl game. Because I think that's the best. That I think would be a winning season. That would be, a triumphant season for Colorado this year. If they can manage to scrounge out a bowl game, that would be, I think, they're in the best possibility at this point.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, we've been to, I think, since 2008, we've been to one bowl game, and that was when the 2016 season, when we went 10-4. And so I think speaking for the vast majority of Colorado fans, going 6-6 would be a huge deal. And people forget we also lost the Air Force and with Mel Tucker and the one season we had him, and then we kind of had to scramble for a coach because of COVID and whatnot. So that kind of put us in a tough situation. So I'm going out for the opener against TCU, so I'm really curious to see what we're going to see because they got Sonny Dykes over there. And I think the talent level at TCU is probably better than Colorado, but it'll give us a good indicator of how the coaching is going and whatnot. And hopefully we can, I'm thinking 4-8, but if we can get to 6-6, I'd be ecstatic. So we'll see.
You know, I never put 2 and 2 together on the twist in terms of, like, you know, the coordinator hires, because, you know, Mike Samford was a really good coordinator before he had that terrible run as head coach of Western Kentucky. But then he ends up at Minnesota, and he was not very good there, and he was not retained. And now he's the offensive coordinator of Colorado. So it's going to be interesting. I don't always say that he may have lost his touch. Sometimes it's just, you know, maybe he and Fleck just weren't a great fit, or maybe the offense just didn't offer the sort of tools that he could make work. But I'm curious to see how he does with Colorado now, because certainly, I mean, he's had success as an offensive coordinator, and I think it would be interesting to see if he could get the offense at Colorado rolling in its first season. But that is going to be an open question for me. I'm curious to see how that goes.
I mean, I think anything will be better than Cheverini last year. A beloved Buff as well. But, I mean, watching the Buffs' offense last year was extremely difficult to watch. I think there was some stat that was, like, the worst offensive production – ESPN said something since like 1984 or something pretty. Anything's better than what we had in the past. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us, Ian. We really appreciate hearing from you.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Juwan, how are you doing, man?
Doing all right. Doing all right. Hey, been listening.
Yeah. What are your thoughts right now, heading into this off-season week?
The odds of teams going undefeated just came out. I think Ohio State had the best odds at 35%, followed by Georgia with 25%. Then you had Alabama, that was about 16%. Then you had Clemson at 15%. Which of the four teams does anybody think is going to go undefeated? My pick for the best odds to go undefeated is Clemson, but I want to see what everybody else thinks.
Well, I mean, I think, gosh, if Ohio State can get through that first game with Notre Dame, and I think they should be able to because Notre Dame is more unsteady given all the coaching changes, they have, a better chance because then, you know, their non-conference slate, the rest of it's fairly soft again. You got Arkansas State, Toledo, and then, you know, they're hosting Wisconsin, which is going to be helpful. And then, you know, they're at Michigan State. That's going to be a tough one. At Penn State. And then, obviously, the game at the end of the season. But I think they might have a better chance. Who do you think, Sirius?
Do I have to pick somebody? Because I never like the odds of anybody running the table just because it's it's just so difficult anymore. Especially with as competitive as some of these conferences have gotten at the very top. And that's, you know, not even accounting for the random chaos that tends to happen. So I'm going to abstain from this because otherwise I'm just going to make a fool of myself because they're probably going to, you know, whoever I pick is going to wind up losing like somehow in the third week on some game.
I'll give you my thoughts on what I think. This is what I've been looking at. Ohio State, yes, they have a great offense, and they got C.J. Stroud. They got weapons everywhere, but they can't stop anybody. Oregon went to the Shoe, and they just ran. They didn't do anything fancy. They just handed the ball off and ran all over Ohio State. Until they get that fixed, they've got the best chance to get beat, in my opinion.
They hire a new defensive coordinator, though. They brought in Oklahoma State.
They did that, but it has to translate on the field. Whenever I look at Clemson, I look at this right here. If they beat Georgia that first game, their whole season changes because you got to look at that game. Georgia never got in the end zone on Clemson at all. DJ Uiagalelei threw a touchdown pass, but he threw it to the other team. And that's what gave them the 6-0 that they won by. That was Georgia's hardest game all season. That was the only game that they didn't put up any points. Their defense shut Clemson out. But if Clemson just could have got a couple touchdowns or any movement at all, they could have won that game easily. So I'm looking at Clemson because look at their defensive line that they're bringing back. Clemson has the nastiest defensive line in all of college football coming back. You can look all across the board. They have multiple first rounders that possibly potential first rounders, I should say. So, and then you look on their offense, Will Shipley is just as electric and as explosive as any running back you can pick. He was the number one running back coming out in that class, and he played as a freshman. And he toted the load pretty good for those guys. The one thing about Clemson is, are they going to have a Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence situation, or are they going to go ahead and ride with DJ the whole time? Because I'm looking for Cade Klubnik to step in, and if not by the first game, by the third game, if DJ Uiagalelei isn't performing, to take his position. That's the only thing that's holding Clemson back. I think Georgia, they've lost way too much. Way too much. I don't see them going undefeated. I don't see them really playing in the conference championship this year. I've picked Tennessee or Kentucky. That's just me personally. And I think Florida might finish at about third or fourth. But that's just how I'm looking at it right now.
Well, and yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to be said about that schedule Clemson has, too. I mean, they're opening a neutral site game, except now for a change, you know, I don't care if it's in Atlanta. Georgia Tech isn't going to pull the same as Georgia will in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So I think they've got a favorable matchup there. Obviously, Furman and
Louisiana. That's a Clemson Tech home game.
Yeah, that's going to be a Clemson home game. So I think you're right. I think, you know, the more you look at that schedule, I mean, the tough game on the road is going to be, I think, Wake Forest is a weird team. I think they're going to be the bigger question. They host NC State, so that's helpful. But then they play at Notre Dame, which is obviously going to be a huge game. It's going to be NBC, all of that stuff. But, oh, man, that I think that's a great that isn't a bad choice. The more I look at it, the more I think if a team's got a shot at going undefeated, Clemson has that opportunity if the pieces fall where they may. And obviously the other question is, you know, reloading on their coordinators on both offensive and defensive. I mean, they've got veterans coming in to step up, but it's still that, you know, you wonder what might happen and how good – because obviously I'm not even questioning Dabo's talent as a head coach, but I mean his ability to kind of manage that and make sure the team doesn't really skip a beat.
And I know it's been about an hour. I think the schedule wise, I think Clemson's got the easiest one just because they're out of conference is fine. I mean they draw Notre Dame this year, but other than that, and Notre Dame's got a new head coach too, so who knows what's going to happen? And the ACC's pretty wide open otherwise, but I'd just be asking about looking back to the Georgia game from last year and saying, well, you know, this is the reason why they're going to run the table, because I think we can go back to, it reminded me in a lot of ways of the 2011 Bama LSU game, the first one, where we saw two teams that were playing to not lose. And I think that's what that game reminded me of, where both of them probably played a lot more conservative than they necessarily could have, and both relied on their defenses to try to get them through it, and they did just enough to win, or to not win in the case of Clemson. But you look at how both of those teams did the rest of the season, and it really didn't match up that well with what we saw in the first game. So DJ, I think it'll be interesting to see if he can move back to where he was in 2020, because it definitely looked like he regressed last year for some reason. And how well they do at replacing their coordinators. Sometimes, you know, defense coordinator you're hiring in-house. Well, both guys are in-house talent, but that's not always necessarily a good thing. So they'll be familiar with the scheme, but sometimes we've seen coaches that have relied a little bit too much on their own talent, on the coaching staff, and haven't been willing to go out and find the absolute best person they could have.
This is my last question, because I know it's been about an hour.
No worries.
This is it. Notre Dame plays USC, Ohio State, Clemson. What's the chances they go 3-0 or at least 2-1?
If they go 3-0, I cannot wait to hear about the massive extension that Marcus Freeman is being handed. You know, at that point. But I, gosh, yeah, that's, 2-1 would be a heck of a thing for Notre Dame in that situation. But I think, again, they're taking, you know, a USC team that who knows what they're going to be like in that first season. I still think that I'm not as convinced as some of the preseason prognosticators on how well the Trojans are going to be in their first year under Lincoln Riley. But, you know, it depends on how much Clemson improves from last year. I think that – so that could be viable. I think Ohio State's going to be the toughest of that trio for them. What do you think, Sirius?
50-50 shot at going 2-1, in my opinion, because I think that two of those games are winnable with the right talent on the field and the right coaching. Adam, you got your hand up. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to say this, that I think this year is probably going to be the first year that we get a two-loss team potentially in the playoff. And I say this, I was looking up the schools that Juwan rattled off there. A lot of schools have a lot of turnover. And if you can see, you know, I would say Clemson has a good shot just looking at their schedule, but it's like Venables is the best known defensive coordinator other than Saban, you know. So that's, you know, that's part of the reason he got the job that he got. But you look at, and he had a good point with, you know, Georgia did lose a lot of guys and they got to go face a good team in Oregon that isn't necessarily losing, you know, a lot of people, but, you know, I think if we're putting money down, I'd bet that, you know, of course Saban's going to have a damn good team. You know, it's going to come back down to like one or two games here, depending on how Auburn, I think, plays them later in the year. And, you know, whenever they catch, you know, somebody in the SEC that wants to play a little harder than they probably should. But again, I think it just goes back down to like, there's going to be a lot of, I wouldn't say upsets. I mean, maybe upsets to the common fan, but as a college football coach myself, I think just the amount of turnover that's happened with transfers and the transfer portal and coaches changing states and everything else, there's going to be some great ball games and some great storylines to be heard and seen. And I honestly can't wait to actually watch some of these games on the bus ride home. So.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks, Adam. Hey, you know, Shell and Tell, you've been super patient. Wrap us up here. Give us something to talk about.
Hey, I just want to touch base. We're a Maryland sports podcast, and we're getting something right now that we're not used to, and that's preseason hype. We do not have the blue blood bump. All the fight is not about the team necessarily, but the wide receiver room. Today I saw on CBS Sports, they had us ranked number four, only behind Ohio State and – I'm sorry, number three, behind Ohio State and USC, ahead of Alabama and Texas. I guess my question is, in the national media, how much of that hedges on the return of Dante Demas, and how much is the fact that we have the five-star in Rakim Jarrett, Jacob Copeland transferring from Florida, and the other pieces, because Demas still recovering from the knee and had some foot issues going on while healing from the knee. So I'm wondering how it's being seen.
Well, you're right in that the passing game for Maryland is the biggest threat. I mean, at least that's what has the potential to continue the – because as you're right, yeah, I mean, is Maryland going to challenge necessarily for the Big Ten? It's not expected. But going, you know, 7 wins last season, I think that was their first winning season since 2014. That's a huge deal for the Terps. So – you're right. Those wide receivers, Rakim Jarrett, Dante Demas, and I think was it Jacob Copeland? Am I right? They got him from Florida. I think there's some potential there, and I think that will. First of all, that means automatically Maryland's going to be an exciting team to watch because obviously, you know, getting that kind of, you know, it's entertaining to watch a good team with a lot of good wide receiver threats, but. I think that's going to be the biggest part about it. I think that's what's getting people interested in the potential for Maryland to be at least the best of the middle. And again, on that unfortunately packed Big Ten East. Now, whether or not – I think they – I'm not sure anyone's going to necessarily say they're going to threaten Ohio State or Michigan for the top, or Michigan State. But I guess Maryland would surprise if they could somehow, you know, manage to push aside Penn State for that kind of second tier. And it's weird to call it a second tier when it's, you know, when there's already three other teams that might be better. But I mean, it's such a packed conference and a packed division that I think that will, though, give them the potential to match, if not surpass, what they did last season. Because certainly their non-conference is winnable. I mean, you know, you host Buffalo, you got Charlotte. You know, SMU could be questionable, but you've got some cross-divisional games at Indiana and some dicier ones. You got Purdue, you got – at Wisconsin's not the greatest draw, but it's doable. I think it's certainly winnable. It's going to be, I think, depending on how great that offense could be. What do you think, Sirius?
I think that there's 7 or 8 winnable games on that schedule, depending on how they do, how much that incoming talent kind of bumps them up a little bit. That, yeah, even if they if it goes chalk against the, you know, the top, the Big Four in the Big Ten East, that you could still have a really solid season there and show, you know, we keep harping on it, right? That steady improvement season to season and building up that foundation. I don't see any reason why you should expect to see regression unless things just really go off the rails.
If Maryland plays like they played in the Pinstripe Bowl, the Big Ten East better watch out.
That was a little bloated. Virginia Tech was out of players, but we certainly had our best showing in, well, in the special teams, especially in that game, and that wasn't all because there was no one playing against them. That was a big Achilles heel of our team last year.
Well, and certainly, you know, you can't, you know, while it is easy to say that was the main reason that that the Terps did so well, but, you know, again, that's good hype going into the season. They're no longer just peaking by beating Texas at the beginning of the season like those 2 years in a row. It's actually now they built something. It feels like they built something. And, you know, it's exciting to see where Loxley's going to have them in their fourth season, I think. So I think Maryland's interesting again, and I think that's great. But
I do think that that statistically they could end up where they stay, because the whole thing is whether Tali Tagovailoa stays healthy. So we're returning an entire offensive line that should help with that. And our defense is not going to be the greatest. We lost two big pieces in Jennings, who ended up at UCF after a couple transfers, and Damian Robinson to Penn State. So I really see a lot of 45 to 54 games in College Park, and I don't know which side we'll end up on, but we'll be slinging the ball, I believe.
Well, thanks for joining us, Schoenthal. It was great hearing from you, and that was a nice one to end on, because we typically go for generally an hour, but we try to be flexible, and it has been an hour and 23 minutes. That was a really fun show. It was wonderful to hear from all of you. On behalf of Sirius, myself, and JD, who will hopefully be here next week, we just want to thank all of you. We always enjoy talking college football. It's a great way to pass the off season. We do these every Tuesday night, almost always at 10 p.m. Eastern, sometimes a little earlier, depending if we have a guest. We're always, well, we might have another guest sooner or later. We'll work on that. We always announce them as soon as we have them. But thanks again, everybody. We hope you have a great week, and talk.